You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and here again to talk about a Central Division that has been intriguing all season, continues to be so down the stretch. Three teams certainly in it, and I would argue a fourth in the Reds is still on the fringes of being in it. Obviously, the Reds would have to get hot here down the stretch to make a significant run, but the way this National League season has gone in general, you get over 500 and you're right back in the thick of things. So the Brewers continue to set the tone in the Central. The Cardinals have had a lot of ups and downs, especially here in the second half. You've yet to really catch fire like they thought they might after the trade deadline. And the Pirates are definitely impacted by that Andrew McCutchen injury. All three of those teams really been impacted by injury in some way. And the Reds season has been just torpedoed by injuries. So injuries playing a big part in how this race will shake out. We're going to bring in each of our NL Central beat reporters to talk about their teams and their outlook for the last 6 weeks. So let's get to it. And talking about Brewers teams still in first place in NL Central. They've been there the better part of the season, thanks to that strong start. And now it's all about holding on these next 6 weeks. And they've been challenged a little bit in their rotation here with the injury to Matt Garza. But some other guys are stepping up. Jimmy Nelson and most prominently this week, Mike Fiers, who had a really incredible outing against the Cubs the other day. Let's bring in Adam McAlvey to talk about that. Adam, Fiers, he's 29 years old, so it's not like you expect a major breakout at that point, but certainly what he's done these last two starts especially has to be opening some eyes there.
Yeah, this is a great story on about five different levels for the Brewers. Number one, he's a late-round draft pick, I believe 21st round in 2009 out of a small college. He doesn't light up the radar gun. Number two, you know, he can be 86 to 88, 89. He already has had his breakthrough. In 2012, he came up for the Brewers in May and went on a stretch that was generating some rookie of the year consideration. He was extremely good for a period of not just a few starts, but a period of weeks and months before fading. Then he went into a dark funk on and off the field, just had everything bad that could possibly happen to a guy happen to him. He struggled at the start of last season, was demoted to the minor leagues. His mother was gravely ill. He returned to pitching in the minor leagues, took a line drive off the arm, broke his arm, missed time. His mother unfortunately passed away, a big blow. She was a huge part of his baseball life, a huge support system for him. He lost her. He comes back this season, and he's, you know, really pitching in her memory. That sounds cheesy and cliche, but he has a tattoo of her on his right forearm. He feels like she's always with him, and he's put together a really remarkable season, not just his couple of big league starts, but in the minor leagues, he's been a strikeout machine. And he does it mostly with deception, also with sneaky good stuff. The hitters will talk about him, his fastball jumping on them a little bit because of his delivery. But given all that he's been through, you know, a really nice story for this Brewers team. And again, you point out correctly that it's important mostly from a baseball perspective because they're a little tested right now for the first time in their pitching. And they need him to step up in a big way. And that game at Wrigley was downright remarkable.
Yeah, 14 strikeouts in six innings. I believe you had to note that only eight guys have done that, have had 14 strikeouts in six innings or fewer. That's rare company. Some nice names
on
the list,
too,
by the way.
Yeah, a couple of bums,
too. Sam McCall, Noah Ryan, Kerry Wood, Randy Johnson, A.J. Burnett, Kelvin Escobar, Max Scherzer, and now Mike Fiers.
Good company.
That's an eclectic list right there.
Here's the other one that I loved is, as of the moment he did this, the list of guys who'd struck out at least 14 in a game this season. It was Clayton Kershaw, King Felix, John Lester, Jose Fernandez, and Max Scherzer earlier in the same day. But Scherzer is a bum. He did it in eight innings. Fiers was able to strike out 14 in six. So I think you obviously, you know, if you're looking for one guy to start a postseason game for you, you'd obviously pick Mike Fiers over Max Scherzer.
He's the guy. Well, on that note, who would be that guy? If the Brewers, I know they're obviously looking to avoid a one-game wild card, and they're still in a great position to do so. But if it's a one-game playoff, who's this team sending them out, you think? Is it Peralta? Is it Loesch?
Well, I think, you know, I heard Gabe Kapler say that he's the smartest guy to me in baseball. He was talking about this with another team about who you pick, and he likes a guy, you know, one-game situation like that, that can throw the ball by people. And for the Brewers, that's obviously Willie Peralta, who has the big fastball. You know, he threw a career-high 115 pitches in a start at Miller Park last week, and pitched 114 of 115 with 98 miles an hour. So he fits the definition of that guy, and he's putting it together, turning into the pitcher the Brewers were hoping he could be, a true shutdown caliber pitcher. I'm biased. I love Kyle Loesch. I love everything Kyle Loesch does for the Brewers, and I find this a fascinating situation because I remember the angst when the Brewers signed Kyle Loesch and forfeited a first-round draft pick, and the situation they were in as a team. There was a lot of question about whether they made the right move there. I think those questions have been totally eliminated. Everything on the field and off that he does for this Brewers team is leads to winning games. You know, I'm not a – maybe people will say I'm making the wrong choice, but if I needed one guy on this Brewers team to win me a game, for me it's Kyle Loesch.
Is he – how's he with the ankle? I know he's had the ankle injury this week. Is that – it doesn't seem like an overly serious situation, but what's your read on that?
Well, here's the thing. Everyone agrees it's not that serious in terms of an injury. It's – is it a sprained ankle? I don't know the exact term. His ankle is sore. And the problem is that it's affecting him mechanically. And I think, you know, alarm bells go off anytime you hear a pitcher talking about altering his mechanics to get by with a nagging injury. And right. That's what Kyle Loesch did for three starts. He hurt it in backing up home plate in the game against the Cardinals. He said, against the Dodgers and got through six innings, one run. But he said he was really sore the next day, because he was basically pitching with his upper body. Now, he's not a 95-96 max effort guy, but that still raises, I think, some red flags if you hear a guy talking about that. And I think the Brewers are going to be extremely careful because, as Ron Reinicke said at Wrigley Field, this guy is really important to what we're doing and what we want to do the rest of the season. And the schedule helps them out a lot. They have an off day that would allow them to just skip Loesch if they opt to do so. And nobody would have to pitch on short rest. Nobody would have to really alter much of anything. So it all sort of conspires to lead me to believe that they're going to back him off a little bit and try to get that soreness knocked out of there so this is his drive leg so he can properly drive and properly pitch. Because he's an important guy, and, you know, they're tested already with Matt Garza on the DL with an oblique that the timetable is just completely open-ended. Hasn't thrown, as far as our conversation right now, since he hurt it. So, you know, they've dipped into their depth a little bit already, and I think they need to be careful about losing Kyle Loesch for a period of time. And not just losing him, but getting him back to at the high level he's capable of pitching at.
Yeah, and with Garza, obviously the longer you go without throwing, the more throwing you have to do to get back, get ready. So that's a situation worth monitoring. Another obviously vital, important guy is Ryan Braun. Now his season, I'm sure there's a lot of Brewers fans disappointed with his season. It's, I guess in the grand scheme of the game, relative to, you know, what's going on offensively, it's still a strong season, but it's obviously not the Ryan Braun of MVP vintage. That hand issue, the nerve issue in his hand, it seems like it's a really vexing situation for him and for the team. It seems like they can't, if you can pardon the pun, can't quite get a grip on what the best course of action there is long term.
Oh, God, you're the best. You're just the best we've got, Anthony. No, it's just for people's backgrounds. If you hold out your right hand in front of your face and it makes that V between your thumb and your index finger, it's in the base of that V, there's a nerve that's inflamed for Ryan Braun.
Right.
And it pings on him. If people have hit their funny bone, you know, sometimes if he goes a couple of days and doesn't square up a couple of balls, kind of, you know, gets the rattle of the bat, it can inflame that nerve again. And then when he does connect, it hurts. And it hurts so bad that it alters the way he swings the bat. It alters his follow-through. it changes his approach. And, you know, we're talking about a pitcher altering his mechanics to deal with an injury. This is the case of the hitter doing the same, and it impacts his ability to drive the baseball. The problem is that he had a long layoff, obviously, last season when he was suspended for the PED violation. The hope was that, you know, those extra months plus the off season, he'd come back and this issue which bothered him last year would be gone. Well, that didn't happen. And the question he's been answering all year is, well, why didn't you just get this fixed while you had this long layoff? And the answer is that this is an unusual injury, and there's no real guaranteed fix for it. There are lots of different options that they're discussing, everything from having surgery to take that nerve out to doing some treatments on that nerve. I've heard of some laser therapy where they can treat that, to not doing anything. And there's some thought that this is just a time thing, that eventually that will stop being a problem. So none of those are guarantees. None of those are sure things. And so they're still gathering information, talking to a lot of different experts, and trying to figure out what to do about this thing so that it's going to bother him all the rest of this year. That's, I think, a given at this point. Yeah. But what about the rest of his career? This is a guy signed through 2020. His salary starts to really jump after this season because his $105 million extension kicks in. After next season. So the salary numbers only get bigger, as is tends to happen with big-time players, and that means they're going to need to get something out of that production. And, you know, if it's for Ryan Braun's own well-being, he wants to get back to, you know, he wants to prove to people that he is still a top-level player after the whole suspension and his undoing over the last 2 years. So this is something everybody wants to fix, but nobody exactly knows how to fix. And there's not really a right answer. It's going to maybe take some trial and error, and at some point they're just going to have to make a call on this.
Well, they got a lot of time to figure it out, that's for sure, as far as his career trajectory when he signed through 2020. But obviously sooner the better there. I guess the one concern there is, he ever going to have a long enough layoff to make a meaningful difference? Because it's probably easy to have setbacks with such an injury when you're a power hitter. But
well, and that's the thing, and that's what leads you to believe that at some point some sort of intervention is going to have to happen here.
Right.
But again, the question is, what do you do? And if you have surgery, my understanding is you can lose feeling in that whole hand, and that sounds like it would be even worse for a hitter than dealing with some pain when you connect. So, you know, that's the kind of tough discussions that they're undergoing, and they're trying to figure out, for now, just how to get him through. They're padding the bat a little bit and doing things like that. But you can really tell. You don't need to be a hitting coach to know when the thing's bothering him, because he'll be going in a good stretch, as he was this time last week. He was going pretty good. And then you see the swings change. Literally, you see the swings change. And that's when you know that something isn't quite right again. But, you know, they're able to take a day, as they did the final game in Wrigley. Thanks to Mike Fiers, that came away as a team win. And, you know, in the past, Ryan Braun has come back and been able to get back on a stretch where he's productive again. And as you pointed out from the very beginning, they're not Ryan Braun numbers, but they're still pretty good numbers.
Right.
You know, he's in the top 10 in RBIs, if that's your bottom line, driving in runs. His on-base remains solid. Again, not to the level we're used to seeing from Ryan Braun, but still a guy who can help you win games, even at this diminished state.
And this team still has a lot of weapons, and as we mentioned earlier, to have a guy like Fiers step in with guards out has been huge, and Jimmy Nelson has made some strides here in his rookie year, so there's a reason the Brewers are still on top. I know they've definitely lived off the fumes of that hot start in a lot of ways, but there's a reason they've been able to maintain. So we'll see how things shake out here the last 6 weeks. I want to thank Adam McAlvey for joining us, talking about the St. Louis Cardinals, and a team that is – obviously still in the wild card hunt, but still hovering around 500 in their play. You know, here in the month of August, they're, I believe, 8-7, which is kind of in line with what they've done all year. Just kind of win some, lose some, trying to make up ground, trying to make that surge to take over the Central Division again. It's been tough with some of the injuries they've had, but, you know, potentially getting Michael Wacha and Yadi Molina back in September would go a great deal towards them reaching that goal. But let's bring in Jennifer Langosch, MLB.com's beat reporter for the Cardinals. And Jen, first of all, what's been the, I guess, the overall temperament of that clubhouse since the trade deadline? They made some aggressive moves. It, you know, as far as the bottom line goes, again, they've still been a team kind of hovered around 500. What's been the general mindset in that room?
Yeah, it's really kind of been same old for this team. You know, I mean, this is a club that still believes, or at least is publicly saying that it believes that its best days are still ahead. And as you mentioned, they kind of win some, lose some. It's really been a season of just kind of treading water. You know, I do think the one thing the Cardinals do hold on to is the fact that they've yet to get on any kind of roll this year, and they've really yet to play their best baseball for any consistent stretch. And they're only a couple games back behind the Brewers in the NL Central. So yeah, the fact that they've been able to stay in a division race while not really playing all that well, I think is a positive that they see. They also see the schedule ahead, and it has them playing a bunch of games against the Brewers, the Reds, the Pirates, the teams that, if they can go out and beat head-to-head, could still put them in position to take this division. So, you know, it's been an interesting season, very frustrating on many fronts, particularly the offensive end, and for a team that still does believe it's underachieving substantially in that area. But again, a team that feels it's pretty fortunate to be where it is in the standings, and that if it can get things turned around and get the guys back, as you mentioned, a Michael Wacha, a Yadier Molina, that maybe they can make a strong run at the end.
Yeah. And harping on that offense, and yeah, to your point, I mean, the National League's been very forgiving, but obviously the offense has been tough to get going all year. We've talked about Oscar Tavares before, gets thrust into a more prominent role as a result of the deals they made at the trade deadline, specifically moving Alan Craig. And, you know, initially he had that burst of offense and kind of took a step back. I know there's some, he's kind of seen the difficulty of young players in a prominent role. I know the other day he missed an opportunity to score from first base, kind of lackadaisical, you know, running from first to third, showed some frustration on a ground out and you know, wasn't quick out of the box on that play. So I guess they've had those teaching moments with Tavares. How is he as far as being responsive to those things, and how are they feeling about his ability to still impact them in a big way here down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly been some frustration to this point from all parties. I mean, there's frustration from Oscar that, you know, really this is the first time in his career that he's really faced any sort of adversity and that he's struggled. I mean, this is a kid who rose through the minor league systems and really had no hurdles along the way until he's gotten here. You know, from the Cardinals end, yeah, there's just been some frustration with some mental lapses, some physical lapses, as you mentioned a couple earlier this week. You know, that were really pointed out, and the Cardinals have used them as teaching points. You know, Mike Matheny mentioned the other day that Oscar has been receptive to the feedback, but being receptive and implementing it, I think, is what they want to see next. And to this point, you know, they're still seeing some lackadaisical effort from Oscar, and I think there's questions right now about the work ethic. You know, and we do have to keep in mind that this is a 22-year-old kid who's trying to get his feet wet at a different level, who, again, has never experienced anything besides a bunch of success. And I think Oscar, quite frankly, is having a hard time figuring out how to deal with it. So, you know, the Cardinals certainly need his bat. I mean, they opened up a spot for him to be their everyday right fielder and kind of expected him to help them lengthen out their lineup. And to this point, you know, it's just really been up and down for Oscar. And as you mentioned, it's really not that unusual for a young player to go through something like this early in his career. I think the tough thing for Oscar is that he was so highly touted all along that a lot of people thought he would come up and thrive right away. And to this point, that hasn't been the case.
Yeah, I guess that would be my take on Tavares too, where, you know, you certainly want the effort, you want the max effort. That should be expected, and that's fair to expect. But at the same time, you know, we know so much about prospects these days before they even set foot in the big league. So that's kind of unfair. And, you know, he's thrust in a situation where they really need an offensive jolt, and that can be unfair to a young kid as well. So, you know, seeing the difficulty of that. We've seen the difficulty with them offensively all season. And I know it's been a very common talking point, you know, their struggles in the clutch and whatnot, especially when compared to, you know, historic production in the clutch last year. But it seems like Mike Matheny, from his comments earlier this week, it seems like he's pretty exasperated with the topic and having to defend his coaches and having to talk about their process. What's been your take on Matheny's, you know, frustration, I'm sure, with some media, and I'm sure his frustration with the situation in general.
Yeah, it's a little ironic because, you know, Mike is a guy who has long said he really doesn't listen to talk radio, he doesn't read the newspaper, he doesn't kind of hear what's going on, and yet all of a sudden he all of a sudden hears all the rumblings about, you know, the coaching staff maybe underachieving, and, you know, and that's not really been something that's come up in the media as much as just the fans' frustration with the offense,
yeah.
And, you know, they lay a lot of that on the hitting coach, John Mabry, and the assistant hitting coach, David Bell, and, you know, Mike's point, you know, this week in kind of getting on the topic was that, you know, hey, these are the same hitting coaches, at least in terms of Mabry, that led this team last year to that historic mark with runners in scoring position, that had this offense clicking on all cylinders a year ago. How does that change in a year? And that a lot of this needs to go on the shoulders of the hitters themselves. So,
yeah.
You know, I think at this point, fans in particular have just been looking for somebody to blame for the frustration, and the hitting coach has been an easy target. And yeah, I mean, Mike stepped up this week to defend John Mabry to the nth degree, and I think he'll continue to do so. But, you know, I don't think you can look past the fact that this team really has there's an approach to this team that worked, you know, successfully last year that has not this year. The ground ball rate is too high. The line drive rate has dropped substantially. It's a team that doesn't hit home runs. And, yeah, again, a lot of that does lie on the shoulders of the offense, but perhaps there is an overall approach that this Cardinals team could revisit at some point.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Jen, but it's been my experience that the more a manager or a coach denies that he reads or listens to any media reports, the more likely he probably is behind the scenes. I think all those guys, you know, have some kind of an eye on those things, and for good reason. But, you know, kind of looking down the stretch here, Lackey and Masterson, the two trade deadline pickups are really important there for that rotation, especially until Waka gets back sometime in September. It's been mixed results for those guys. Masterson had a really strong start in Miami earlier this week. Lackey's had a couple nice ones surrounded by a really difficult one, but what would have been the overall impressions of those two guys and you know, how they're going to fare here?
Yeah, as you mentioned, the results had been mixed. I think the Cardinals were very encouraged by what Justin Masterson did his last time out. I mean, obviously his first two starts here did not go well by any means. It kind of had been more of the same of what he had been dealing with in Cleveland. And, you know, the Cardinals were very open when he arrived that they wanted to kind of just let him pitch and really listen to him as to what he'd been going through this season before they started bombarding him with their ideas. And, you know, that's what they did. And after two starts that didn't go all that well, they did start giving him some feedback and worked on some mechanical adjustments. He goes out and has 7 shutout innings in his last start. So, you know, I don't know if that's going to be the expectation moving forward that he's going to dominate as he did in Miami, but certainly the Cardinals do hope that some of those adjustments do make him an effective starter going forward. With John Lackey, I think it's been kind of as expected. He did have the one clunker in Baltimore, though that whole series was kind of as such for this Cardinals team. But his two starts at home, 7 strong innings, again, a guy who's proven to be a workhorse in a rotation that really needed innings, and that was one of the reasons they went after John Lackey. And I do think he's going to continue to be a formidable piece in this rotation.
Jenna, it sounds like Yadier Molina is maybe even a little ahead of schedule. He started some catching activities earlier this week out of the cast, obviously. What's the latest read on him and potentially getting him back for the stretch run?
Yeah, I mean, you know, initially this was an injury with a timetable of 8 to 12 weeks for recovery. And, you know, you look at when it happened, and 8 weeks brings him back in September. 12 weeks, you know, doesn't bring him back at all unless this team is in the postseason. But real encouraging on Thursday to show up at the ballpark and see him catching a bullpen session. He got his cast off now about a week ago, his hard cast, and is now wearing a soft cast, and he was able to use it and still throw a little bit yesterday. So, you know, the Cardinals all along expected that Yadi would push himself in this recovery, and that's really been the case so far. And, you know, because of it, it's looking like he's probably going to be on that shorter time frame in that 8 to 12 weeks range. You know, the thing that's going to come last is going to be the hitting, and it's going to be the gripping of the bat. So the Cardinals do expect him to continue to kind of catch bullpens right now, throw lightly, eventually get to the point where he can throw without the cast, and then it's going to be trying to hit. I think the thing, you know, that is worth mentioning is that throughout the last 5 weeks of kind of downtime, Yadier Molina has immersed himself in the weight room and really looks like he did coming into spring training just in terms of the physique and you know, how good of conditioning that he is in. So I would say that once he returns, he should be fresh. He should be in a really good position to help this team down the stretch run. And again, with where we are now, you know, you're probably looking at maybe an early to mid-September return, which was best case scenario for the Cardinals all along.
Yeah, that would be big for them. And as you alluded earlier, Jen, you know, the final stretch here is really, really heavily weighted with division games. Actually, beginning Monday, 33 of their final 39 games are in the division, and that obviously is a heavy dose of the Pirates, Brewers, and Reds, and you know, that's going to be a very important stretch for the Cardinals and for those teams as well. So I want to thank Jennifer Langosch for joining us and talking about the Cardinals, talking about a Pirates team that is still in the thick of the wild card chase, despite losing their best player, Andrew McCutchen, to a rib fracture. Actually, I talked to a member of a rival club right after it was announced that McCutchen had the rib fracture, and his quote at the time was, "They're done." But they've won 5 of 10 going into the weekend since McCutchen has been out. Obviously, that's not terrific, but it's also not a total disaster either. They've kind of treaded water, which is maybe the best thing that could be expected at this point. You know, losing a player of that caliber. So entered the weekend still in wild card standing. In fact, so that's a credit to their fortitude and also a credit to a forgiving National League. Let's bring in Tom Singer, Pirates beat writer for MLB.com to talk about that. And Tom, what's been your read on how this team has performed? It's not just losing McCutchen, but they've also had Neil Walker out of the lineup the better part of the last couple weeks as well, as he's battled that bum back. So what's been your read on how they've played without those two key parts of their lineup?
All right. And let's not forget Pedro Alvarez, who was such an important dog last season. A lot of players have stepped up, primarily when you're talking about the McCutchen situation. Travis Snyder had a really good week. Josh Harrison obviously kind of moved in as a regular third baseman anyway, so that kind of negates the Alvarez absence. But overall, you know, they got some good pitching and just enough hitting to, like you said, it's a good way to put it. They've been treading water. But, you know, they can't do it for too long. And also, although now they're into a tough part of the schedule, when McCutchen first went out, they were still in a weak part of their schedule playing some also-rans, and that's kind of played into it as well. But basically, they have survived. They cannot do it long range without McCutchen. And, you know, Neil Walker may be even more vital from the standpoint that they do have capable players to briefly substitute for McCutchen, as I mentioned, Travis Snyder. But at second base, that's a real big hole. You know, Neil Walker may be more indispensable than McCutchen from that standpoint.
Yeah. And it sounds like Walker is able to get back in the lineup this weekend, by all accounts. Although at the same time, Jordy Mercer goes out with a strained forearm, so it's kind of a quid pro quo there, I guess. But as far as McCutchen is concerned, you know, it's such a rare injury. I know it's been his timetable has been pretty murky as a result of that, but I know he's also probably made quicker progress than you might have expected. You know, the minute he went down, What's the latest on him, and any idea as far as timetable goes? I know he's eligible to come off the DL on Tuesday, I believe. Is that a possibility?
Well, it's a possibility. I mean, he has made a very quick recovery. He's taking batting practice, throwing at quite a long distance. But the difficulty with that injury, like you mentioned, it's rare, so there's really no case study that they can follow. And it seems to me it's the kind of injury that is easy to re-aggravate, very easy to re-aggravate if you come back from it too soon. So, yeah. I mean, it's a crapshoot as far as, he may feel game ready, but, the rib, the cartilage may not cooperate if it comes back too soon, and it's a very easy thing to re-aggravate. So I think it's a tough call. The trainers, McCutchen himself is known as a very honest self-evaluator. There's no question he'll want to come back when he's eligible on Tuesday, but they may want to hold off. You can practice all you want, but game speed is totally different. You don't back off if you feel something if you're in a game, as opposed to just working out. So it's a very difficult situation to be in to make the decision once you, you know, when you're activating.
Yeah, it's not an exact comparable. I guess it's similar to an oblique in that it's very easy to re-aggravate in a sport that requires so much rotation. So talk about another area that's ailing in a different sense is the bullpen. It's had one of the higher ERAs in the National League in the month of August. I know they've kind of been beating the bushes looking for help there. They acquired John Axford, who's had a disappointing season with the Indians. The Indians signed him to be their closer and kind of flamed out in that role, just kind of hovered around in a middle relief role since then. They got Vin Mazzaro down at AAA. Maybe he's an option. They got rid of Ernie Frieri, who obviously his struggles this season are well documented. So what's your take on the bullpen situation, Tom? How's that going to shake out here in the next couple of weeks?
Well, they need more than John Axford. Hopefully he can help in the middle of the leaf. You know, the back end of the bullpen has been pretty reliable, Wilson, yeah. Watson, and Melanson. But, you know, the way Hurdle uses his bullpen, he will absolutely not use a guy a third day in a row, depending on how many pitches he threw the day before, maybe not even 2 days in a row. So you've got a lot of games where, you know, those three are simply not available. And when they have not been available, the guys they've had in a support role, Gomez and Pimentel, they just, you know, have not been able to do the job. The bullpen's given up an awful lot of runs, in total, you know, last month. And then when you factor in how well the two lefties, Watson and Wilson, have pitched them the Melanson at the very end of it, when you factor in their good contributions, obviously the rest of the bullpen has been really imploding.
Yeah. You know, one guy who's kind of helped give them quality innings and take some of the pressure off the bullpen, and maybe even surprisingly so, is Vance Worley, who's stepped in this year with all the injuries to the rotation. And he's made 11 appearances for the Pirates, 10 starts, has a 2.51 ERA, 43 strikeouts versus 11 walks. How do you explain Vance Worley and his contributions here this season? I imagine they've been pleasantly surprised by what he's contributed.
Well, they obviously expected him to help. Otherwise, they would not have picked him up. But his contributions have gone beyond their expectations. He basically has the tremendous command. He's been hitting his spots. You know, he's not overpowering. His fastball topside at maybe 91. But his control has been exceptional. And he's a real competitor. He's a fighter on the mound. You can tell the demeanor when he's on the hill. He's basically very hard-nosed and doesn't give in. And so far, you know, it's worked out very well. You know, Worley combined with what Volquez has given him, two more examples of how the Pirates, you know, in their market, they have to, you know, buy low and hopefully get five returns. And once again, with these two right-handers, they definitely did it again. They kind of recreated the Adrian Burnett, Liriano agenda. And, you know, when Gerrit Cole comes back and his return could be pretty close, maybe one more rehab outing, somebody in the rotation will have to give way. Jeff Locke, who also has pitched defendably, is the one guy who has options left. So he may be the odd man out. But then again, Worley had some history in relief, so maybe he's going to help find in the bullpen. And the difficulty with making that move is basically he pitched in relief for the Twins quite a bit after he fell out of their rotation and just did not take well to regular relief work. So that may not work out. But he's definitely a factor X in the middle of that bullpen if Cole comes back and they decide to remove Worley from the rotation.
Yeah, it's good to have those options, especially with the way the middle relief has been underperforming here. Lately, Worley is actually interesting because, yeah, you mentioned his experience with the Twins last year, but his fielding independent pitching marks this season are really in line with the way he was in Philadelphia from 2010 to 2012, and then he had a really tough season in Minnesota. So maybe he's just one of those guys, more suited to the National League. I'm not sure, but
after Worley had a couple, two, three good outings. There were some voices in Philadelphia that don't expect this to continue because they know his history.
Yeah.
But so far, he has counter those expectations from teams that he's played with, and they know his history. So I think he's probably had his most consistent two-month stretch ever.
Yeah. You mentioned Cole and him coming back soon. He was getting scratched earlier this month from a planned start, and then he came back Sunday for Indianapolis and was dominant. Do you think there was any temptation at that point to kind of ride the hot hand and get him back in the mix immediately? Obviously, they didn't go that route. They opted to give him another rehab start. What was the thinking in that decision?
Well, there was a little bit of temptation. He only faced 70-some pitches in their last rehab outing, which is the main reason why he's going to do one more rehab, try to push it closer to 90. And the reason they resisted the temptation to bring him back after that rehab start, we just touched on it. It's the middle relief. If you do put him back in a rotation after a 70-pitch rehab outing, then you're basically expecting him to only go five innings. And that kind of puts the burden on the middle relief to get it to the end of the bullpen. And as we said, the middle relievers just had not been keeping up their end, so they didn't want to take that chance.
Yeah. Well, it's a interesting juncture of the season, and maybe they get, if all goes well, you can potentially slot Cole in beginning of next weekend when they're in Milwaukee. And that actually starts a really important stretch for the Pirates. We're looking ahead here, but that three games in Milwaukee, then three games at home against the Cardinals, and then three more games at home against the Reds. So we're getting into that juncture of the season where these division games are just hugely important, especially when these are the teams you're battling for either a wild card spot or the division lead. So we'll see how the Pirates fare, and obviously getting McCutchen back, getting back to full health would be a huge milestone for them, and it would be very impactful in the National League in general. So we'll see how that shakes out for the Pirates. I want to thank Tom Singer for joining us. I want to thank you for listening in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this has been MLB.com Extras, Pittsburgh Pirates edition. I'm going to be joined by Mark Sheldon of MLB.com, talk about the Reds, who, what else is new? Another tough injury blow this week, losing Homer Bailey to the DL with a flexor mass strain in his throwing elbow. And, that really hurts a rotation that has really kept the Reds afloat in light of all the other injuries to the lineup, notably Joey Votto and Brandon Phillips. So let's bring in Mark to talk about this. Mark, first of all, we knew the Reds players had to know what a challenge they're up against, losing those two key guys in the middle of the order to begin with. What was kind of the mood or the feeling when Bailey went down as well, just knowing what that rotation has meant to them?
Well, like you said, the rotation's been the bread and butter of the team all season, and really what they're facing right now is two things. The rotation's kind of taken on water in the sense that not only is Homer Bailey going to be sidelined for an undetermined amount of time, it could be a month, it could be a couple weeks, but Alfredo Simon has completely hit the skids. He's winless in six starts since the All-Star break and is pitching nothing like the guy that he was that made the All-Star team. So now you have two guys that are really missing from the rotation, so to speak, and you couple that with the offensive struggles and not really playing very well of late, it really is getting to be a really troublesome time for the Reds. The mood, as far as Bailey goes, it's unfortunate, of course, but they have so many other things going on right now that they need to work on. They are buoyed by the fact that Brandon Phillips could be back pretty soon, but they need to start stepping it up.
Yeah, can you rank these injuries, or is it tied for first as far as which has been most or will be most impactful, whether or not this team gets October? Thinking of Votto, Phillips, and now Bailey. I mean, those are three big ones, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, Bailey was pitching so well since the break. Starting pitching, of course, is huge in the later months of the season, and, of course, definitely the postseason. So you really don't want to lose a starting pitcher. They've been able to stay afloat and be in contention because of their starting pitching. So I would almost rank Bailey first, and then not having Votto and Phillips has been just tough. They just aren't scoring runs like they should be, and they're losing a lot of one run games. They lead the league in one run losses, excuse me. So but at least they're going to be getting Phillips back possibly as soon as next week. Votto still remains a bit of a mystery when he's going to return. It's not even clear that if these guys both come back, if they can even help the cause, especially Votto, if he hasn't played in a couple of months and may not get back in time to have a rehab assignment with the minor league seasons being over. who knows what he can do.
Sure. Yeah, and his injury has been so abstract anyway, as far as timetable goes. And it sounds like Bailey's somewhat similar situation where they're somewhat vague about, or not even somewhat, they're vague about exact timetable, other than to say that they hope to have him back by the end of the season. But and get back to Phillips, he starts his rehab assignment in AAA, and as you said, should be back in the lineup soon. But I'm sure there's some concern there, just what they'll get from him. Just I mean, he had about a 700 OPS before he went on the DL, and we know how hand injuries can impact a hitter. So are they cautiously optimistic that he'll be a big boost, or are they nervous that they might not be getting the Brandon Phillips of old too?
Well, between the players and Brian Price, the manager, they're talking optimistically because it certainly can't hurt to have him come back. But at the same time, you're like you said, he hasn't really been the Brandon Phillips that the team has, you know, enjoyed for several seasons. Really hasn't been the same since midway through last year when he got hit on the forearm. He hasn't really performed the same. He hasn't been the key guy that they've really grown accustomed to. He but at the same time, he provides a huge boost defensively. He's been very Gold Glove caliber this year. I don't know where they will put him in the lineup when they do bring him back, but I would say he could provide a boost, but we shouldn't over-exaggerate what kind of it is. He's not going to come in here and start smacking home runs and driving in runs because he really wasn't doing that a great deal before he went on the DL.
Yeah. Let's talk a little about Brian Price. I mean, this is a rookie season for him in the managerial seat. 8 guys on the DL on opening day, and obviously these injuries we talked about here that's, you know, severely impacted the second half. Just wondering, you know, how do you grade this guy in his first year? That's a really tough circumstances to manage through, and I guess to still be remotely near 500 is probably an achievement in light of the injuries. But, you know, and you kind of balance that against it. They've had a lot of close losses. I believe they've had 28 one-run losses this season. So what's your assessment of how Price has handled things here in his first year?
I think he's done a good job in the sense of keeping things optimistic and you know, you don't get the sense that the team, he has lost the team or anything like that. Yeah. I give him credit for that. This team has managed to stay afloat while almost literally treading water the whole season. So I give him credit for keeping that from happening. The fact that the team's even in the race at all is definitely a credit to the players, but also a credit to him. On the other hand, he's made some questionable decisions at times. You know, there was a huge one the other day against the Red Sox. They had runners on first and second and no outs and weren't able to get anybody in, and he had Ramon Santiago, a pinch hitter, bunting 3 times in a row and bunting with 2 strikes and struck out.
Yeah.
And you kind of question why he would do that. And he was second-guessed, and he accepted that. He said he basically didn't want to double play, and he wanted to put pressure on Boston. And if you want to accept his answer, that's fine. But it's definitely open for criticism. And there's been a few moves like that this year where you scratch your head and you're wondering what the choices were, or when, you know, not bringing in Chapman in a certain situation and things like that. But I think overall, I give him a good grade for keeping the team going. But there's definitely room for improvement.
He really, I mean, he called out the team week before last with kind of a lackadaisical effort in Cleveland, and he was really pointed in his post-game comments, which you don't always see. You certainly don't always see from a rookie manager, not even almost, but admitting that he played some part in that as well. He could have been more aggressive at times, as far as controlling the run game and that sort of thing. So it's interesting to see him, A, call out his players like that or challenge his players like that, and the B, that takes some ownership himself. Not a lot of guys would do that, especially in a first-year scenario. And last year, Dusty Baker, there were obviously complaints about the way that team played down the stretch and didn't show the fire you might have liked to see. So is that an area where maybe Price has opened some eyes, I guess, in that clubhouse? Has he been more I know that was one game, and they seemed to respond to it well at the time. But you know, what were the thoughts on how that all went down?
Well, I was actually on vacation during that series, but I was reading up on it. But I will say this: that he's really towed the fine line of protecting his players, kind of in a way that Dusty Baker has. I haven't seen him at many times sell out a player for a mistake or an entire team for very often. He's taken ownership of his mistakes. He's taken at times ownership for the coaching staff mistakes. But you know, the one thing he's done also is he hasn't been afraid to put the onus on the players to self-correct. A great example is last night with Alfredo Simon, who hasn't pitched well at all, and you know, people were asking about the fatigue of being at his innings or what's not working, and he basically said he has a lot to learn as a starting pitcher, and he's not executing his pitches, and his velocity's there, so the fatigue isn't an issue. I don't make excuses for the players. And he more or less said he needs to learn how to be a starting pitcher. Grady had a first, the next first half, and now he has to learn how to deal with adversity. And he's basically not dealing with it that well, and he was pretty pointed with his comments. And I think he did it in a respectful way that doesn't bury Simon, but it also challenges him to improve. And I think he's done a very nice job in the sense of striking, a balance where he doesn't bury his players and lose the clubhouse, but he also doesn't, you know, let them off easy for when they don't perform well.
Yeah. Well, he's made a point to point out this week that there's still the season is drawing towards a close here, and some urgency is needed, especially with all these division games that are going to really the September schedule is going to be severely weighted towards those division games. So the Reds still have a shot to get back in this thing, but it would sure help if they had more healthy bodies, no question about it.
Absolutely.
I want to thank Mark Sheldon for joining us.
Hello, this is Phil Rogers, columnist with MLB.com. Here with Kerry Muscat, Cubs beat reporter for MLB.com. So, Kerry, I bet you'd never guess what I'm going to ask you right off the bat, who I'm going to ask you about.
Probably about Javi Baez, I would guess.
Well, I'm really tempted to go with Kyle Hendricks because I have a real history of burying the lead. But
okay.
I will jump right into Mr. Javier Baez, called up in Colorado, made his big league debut. Came home at his first series at Wrigley Field, unfortunately with the wind blowing in every day, but he got some bonus at-bats in some of those long games you've been covering. Hey, before we do that, because people want to know, how are you holding up? Six extra inning games.
We've had six extra inning games in the last 12, and it just means a lot more coffee. That's all.
Yeah, okay. Jason Beck had the 19-inning one in Toronto, and he references popcorn. The popcorn and coffee,
yeah.
The sports writer's best friend. But
yeah, yeah.
Back to Mr. Baez. What from watching him get his feet wet in the big leagues, what really struck you about him?
I think the fact that he's so calm and really feels like he belongs here. He's not fazed by this. He's not intimidated at all. He's not overwhelmed. There's no sense. Let's see, what other cliche can I throw out? He doesn't look like the deer in the headlights at all. He doesn't have that look about him at all. He's just, he really feels as if he belongs here. And in talking to a lot of the players, his teammates, they've really welcomed him and done everything they can to make it an easy transition.
He swings the bat so crazy hard, doesn't he? I mean, it is something to watch. He winds up on his knees sometimes. But then he's got other bats.
Yeah.
I think it was middle game of the series against the Rays, his first time up. He struck out on six pitches and didn't swing at any of them, borderline pitches.
I think he was trying to prove to us that he was patient.
Kind of doing a dance between learning to what pitches to cut loose on and you know, how to work these big league pitchers.
Yeah, I think the six pitch thing. I know I was watching it and I was kept waiting for something. And I think maybe it was just him sort of trying to prove, yeah, I can take a pitch, and I'll show you. And he took six pitches, and that was it. He's just very relaxed, and he's establishing his routine and getting used to Wrigley. And I think as he is going to strike out a lot. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He is going to strike out, and I think the Cubs have accepted it. I think probably the nicest thing for him is that he knows that in the final 50 games of the season that he's going to be here, and it's a chance for him to just get his feet wet. It's a chance for him to get a feel for it, and it's not like he's going to be sent down in on October, you know, 30th or anything like that. He's going to stay, and they're going to let him go out there and play and see what happens.
Looking at the recent play, one guy who jumped out at me, and we talked about him a little bit in other weeks, that he was bothered early in the year by an injury. Wellington Castillo, it looks like he's really made some strong throws, and maybe he looks a tick healthier, a tick more like the old guy. Have you seen that, Terry?
I guess I think the thing with Wellington is that he's really focused on making sure he takes care of the pitchers. So his numbers, his offensive numbers have dropped. Defensively, yes, he's been working really hard, and he's a little better behind the plate in terms of throwing out the runners. I think I'd like to see more home runs. I know it's in them. They just have to be careful in terms of keeping him healthy. His legs, he's got some issues with his legs, just trying to stay healthy that way. But I think his work with the pitchers has really just impressed everybody, and that's as long as he continues that way, they'll be happy.
I mentioned Kyle Hendricks throwing that out there. I mean, he seems like a guy that is making the most of his opportunity, exactly like you should probably think of an Ivy leaguer. I know he has good command, spots the ball. What would you say? What would you attribute his early success to, for the most part?
Kyle, I think, has taken what he learned at Dartmouth in terms of his study habits and carried it over into the big leagues. I mean, this guy has a very specific preparation plan in terms before his start. You know, in terms of how much video he watches, what he does with the scouting report, what he does in talking to people about it. For him to go to Colorado and hold the Rockies to 6 hits and 2 runs over 8 innings was really impressive, especially since it came a day after Arrieta had given up, you know, 13 hits in a short amount of time. I mean, Hendricks, he's just so poised, and the feedback from the Rockies was that there was just a lot of movement on his pitches that they weren't expecting, and they didn't quite know how to counter. And I think, you know, as long as Kyle continues to do his homework, I think he'll be okay.
You know, I think talking about that pitching staff, it was pie in the sky for at least a time, but we had a recent waiver claim of Cole Hamels before the Phillies pulled him back, but we've also seen a trade after a waiver claim of Jacob Turner from the Marlins. Felix Dubront is around and throwing on the disabled list. Who all do you look at to get auditions? I mean, I know that's a word that makes some people cringe, but it seems like, you know, the Cubs have another 7 weeks or so left in this season to see what all they have. So when you look at the rotation, who do you expect to get starts that haven't gotten them already?
Well, I'm not sure who's going to get starts. I know Dubront and Turner both want to start. If they did get a start, it would only be if one of the other guys faltered, and I'm not sure there's any reason, although they have been kind of shortening up Travis Wood's outings, unless they want to give him a blow and skip him for a turn. But I just don't see it. I think Turner right now, the plan is to have him be a long man out of the pen. Or actually, the first plan is to get to know him, and then the second element is to just have him be a long man out of the pen. Dubront should be starting a rehab assignment pretty soon, and then he'll be eased back into it too. I'm not sure. You know, they're so happy with Hendricks and what he's done, and yet they may decide that, you know, he's hit his pitch limit, and the same thing with WADA. They may decide that in terms of their innings that they don't want to overtax him a little bit, and maybe they'll give Dubront and Turner an outing. But I haven't heard that kind of talk yet. I think it's more still in kind of the getting to know you phase with Dubront and Turner.
For our last minute or two together, we of course we always got to look down in the farm system at what's coming, and I looked at the numbers. I can't believe Jorge Soler actually has a higher OPS at AAA Iowa than Chris Bryant. I mean, Soler just absolutely killing the ball. But the guy that kind of jumps out to me is neither of those guys. It's Mike Holt. You know, as we speak, he's hitting .338. With 5 homers, 19 RBIs, and 19 games since he got sent to AAA. And I know the knee-jerk reaction is to think, oh, so what, he's hitting at AAA. But he didn't hit at AAA in 2013. He had 201 total last year in the minors. So could this be a significant thing that Olt has something, you know, whether it's comfort level or who knows what? How much longer do we need to see him doing that before it's time to get excited that this guy that was highly regarded might, you know, still pay a big dividend, whether it's with the Cubs or in the trade?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for Mike Olt down at Iowa has really simply been regular playing time. He's just played every day, and that's, you know, that's really all there is to it. I mean, the guy, as soon as he got down there, they put him in the lineup and they said, that's it, you know, and don't even think about sitting on the bench at all. So it's just been regular bats, regular work, lefties, righties, doesn't matter. They just have him in the lineup. And I think that's been, plus, you know, you're hitting in the lineup with Bryant and Soler. That's not too bad either. So I'm looking at his splits, and his splits are pretty good too in terms of lefties, righties, which is encouraging. They were using him primarily with the Cubs in a platoon situation. So maybe it really, to me, a lot of guys will say this, it just comes down to just regular playing time.
Well, I could be wrong about this, but I think if the Cubs get a choice, they would be the first National League team to say yes to the designated hitter rule. But, Kerry, thanks very much for joining us.
All right, that's a wrap. I want to thank you for listening in. I want to thank the Beat Crew for joining us. This has been MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition. On behalf of Phil Rogers, I'm Anthony Cashman.